Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner, and I am beyond the guy who created Mixergy. I'm also now passionate and curious about homeschooling, and I became that a little bit after my kids were told that they couldn't go to school because of COVID-19, and for a while there was just kind of, all right, what do I do with this? I guess I'm the person in the family who's going to take the lead on this in some way, but also I just don't know what to do. And I started out with that, I don't know what to do, but I'll kind of figure it out. And then I got really curious about it. And then I got to watching what my kid does at school and thought, I always hated school. This, I could see using the video chat that my kid is doing with his class that the teacher's really working hard, but it's not picking up on who he is. And so I started at night to look into, how do you do homeschooling right? How do you teach? What's going on? And I'm not the only one. I'm looking online and I see that people are both frustrated by this and actually I was going to say unexcited. I don't think I've seen anyone get excited about homeschooling. But we're all in this and I feel like I want to learn as much as possible. Even if my kids go back to school in a few months, I want to know how to help them in school. This is too much about me. So let me bring this off and give you guys a top view here. I think that the world is changing. I think there are many people like me who are in the world of homeschooling who are saying, I got to take it on. I have to take it on. I'll figure it out. Maybe they're developing a passion. Maybe they're just developing a new skill. And the future of, I'm really blabbing here, aren't I? This is like the most passionate interview that I'm doing and it's leading me to blab. Aditya Nagrath is the founder of Elephant Learning. What they do is they take a math curriculum, they gamify it, and they use it to help kids learn 1 year of math in 3 months. As somebody who's been passionate about homeschooling, I'm curious about this. And as someone who's noticing that the world is shifting towards homeschooling and remote learning, I'm curious about how it's impacting his business. So I invited him here to talk about it, and I promise I will not be yapping like that throughout the interview. One last thing before I ask your first question. This interview is sponsored by HostGator and ClickFunnels. Aditya, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if you've ever seen that in conversation where you're like at a dinner party or something and you just notice yourself in a hole that you've dug for yourself as you're speaking. You go, how do I get out of this? That's what was happening to me in the intro. Hey, have you seen growth during this homeschooling thing that's happening around COVID-19? You have?
Yeah, we've...
How much?
We've seen a lot of people come on. I'd say we've increased by 50%, and we've brought on thousands of parents in the last month since this started.
And they're all paying monthly. How much?
So right now we're $35 per month. We do have scholarships through a nonprofit called Math Matters, and so many people are paying as low as $10 per month for this. Hmm.
I think that what's going to happen is that parents are going to start to take a more active role in teaching their kids based on how they're doing it right now. And I don't think it's going to be universal. It might even be a minority, but it's a significant minority. What do you think? Do you think there's going to be a blip and when parents have their kids go back to school, they're just going to cancel and go back to the previous life?
Well, that's challenging to say. It depends on the parent's goal. It depends on the student. I think that you're likely correct. I think that what we've been seeing is that there are a lot of parents that are moving towards homeschooling because they do believe that the personal attention that their student needs is not being addressed. And I think that potentially a lot more parents are aware of that because of what's occurred, because they have to sit with their students right now and see that they may not be understanding what's happening in the classroom.
I think obviously we don't know, but there's something happening here. I think if we're going to start to see more parents go remote, they might start to be more accepting of their kids working remotely, and working remotely means learning remotely with some parental guidance. I think that's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be as huge a shift as remote work, but I just think for myself, it's opening up a whole new world of possibilities. Can we travel, Olivia and I, more again, the way that we did when COVID goes away, and then bring the kids along and do some remote work from more interesting places and not be locked down? Can we pay attention to how our kid is changing from quarter to quarter, from semester to semester, from year to year, and then adjust their learning style, where a school would just say, hey, you're in here until middle school, and then through middle school, you're in the new school, and then you're in high school, and you're kind of locked in those blocks. Maybe we could adjust more. What's your revenue overall?
Right now, we're on a run rate of $4 million this year.
$4 million. What'd you do last year, 2019?
I think we're pretty close to three or over three.
Wow. All bootstrapped?
Yeah, we started about 3 years ago. It was all basically funded out of my savings account.
Wow. How much did you put into it?
Somewhere around $300,000 or $400,000.
And are you guys profitable?
Yeah.
Wow. How's it feel to talk about money when it's your own money and not like some VC's money?
Well, I don't know. I never had VC, so
I'm not sure. I'm just looking at you as I'm asking these questions and wondering, like, am I making him feel uncomfortable or not? You seem okay with it. What was the job that you had before?
So before I was running a contract software engineering firm, and we bootstrapped that. I started it in Ukraine. I was out there.
This is the Elephant Head software that you created?
That's right, Elephant Head Software.
Okay.
And
what type of work were you doing?
Oh boy, all sorts. We were doing stuff like embedded software on Linux, embedded Linux, iOS, Android, web. We were doing Ruby on Rails for a while. Okay. And now if we were to turn back into a shop, we'd probably be a Node.js shop.
And so I'm looking at this. You've had clients like Verizon, Samsung, am I right?
That's right.
Mobistar, the big phone company that I recognize from my time in South America. It was a pretty successful business. You then joined an entrepreneur organization, is that right? And saw somebody do something that changed, I guess this sounds dramatic, but it did. It changed your future. What was this person doing?
Absolutely. So I went to a Thomas Edison event in Vancouver. It was put on by EO or YPO. Mm-hmm. And the CEO of Plastic Bank was there. And Plastic Bank is a $200 million company, or at least that's what he said at the time. And the story behind it was that he had seen in the Pacific Ocean that thing on the news where there's like plastic the size of Texas out in the ocean, right?
Yeah.
And he thought to himself, there's no way that's not worth money. So what he did was he devised a plan where people in India would pick up plastic as it washed ashore. They would deposit it in the plastic bank and they would recycle it. And it just so turns out that the amount they pay them is more than they would get paid in the shops. And they're able to recycle it at a profit, and they're able to measure how many pounds of plastic they're taking out of the ocean. So it's what they call a triple bottom line company. And so after I had seen that, it kind of opened my eyes that business could be about something more than just making money, but mm-hmm. that you could just kind of join on something that typically a government would do, but then you would have an organization that is profitable, but that also has enough revenue and organization behind it that it kind of lives on by itself.
I never heard of Plastic Bank before you, but I'm looking at them right here and I could see they're collecting plastic, they're collecting all kinds of different products, and they're helping people who are picking it up make some good money. And so you decided, what were you going to do after that?
Well, so I bumped into a professor of mine, and we had done some contract work for them, but he had a National Science Foundation grant that he was applying for, and he needed a business to partner with. And the idea was that we were going to try to take some games that he had and create some new games for older students, basically. He had maybe pre-K and kindergarten, and we needed to build first, second, third grade kind of thing. And at that time, I was looking to move out of the contract software engineering space. I was looking to try to get into maybe something that was more product, something that was more scalable without human beings. And so I kind of took on his proposal, and I said, well, we could do this for the money, or we could try to do this seriously. I'd rather try to do it seriously. So in which case, you're going to have to show me that there's a business here. And he's saying to me, let's take it to schools. You know, there's all this Title I money. And I said, yeah, that's probably not going to happen, to be honest with you, because I'm watching the news. Like, I think on John Oliver, it was saying that you know, companies were giving $100 gift cards to principals and superintendents for putting something like, you know, like at the rate of $1,000 a piece. I'm like, I don't have $100,000 to do that. And, I don't have any of the relationships that would be necessary. Do you have any relationships? No. Okay. So that's a no-go on that business. Like, you're gonna have to convince me about this. And so what he told me was that 4 out of 5 students start kindergarten unprepared for the kindergarten curriculum. And I thought, I was like, that's kind of surprising to learn. Could you tell me, like, how could that even be? And so he says, well, for the typical parent, if you say the numbers 1 through 10, then that's typically a thumbs up. My kid is counting to 10. And the kindergarten curriculum actually starts at counting to 20. So they assume that your child can count to 10. But what they mean by counting to 10 is, give me 10 things. The student slides over 10 things and stops on 10. So I was like, okay, I can see that's a very different skill, right? In the first case, they could just be saying the numbers. But in the second case, they have to really understand what 10 is. And it just turns out that, like, if you look at the research that's out there, preschool math scores predict third grade reading scores better than preschool reading scores. And preschool math scores also predict fifth grade overall scores, meaning that it's not just fifth grade affected. 75% of high school students right now are not proficient at high school mathematics. And 69. That's right. That was a 2019 statistic, NAACP. Okay.
And you're saying all this goes back to even pre-K. And that's right. If they can't at pre-K, not just count to 10, but be able to move 10 items over to show that they understand what counting to 10 means, they're going to be set up for failure later on. So if I understand you right, at first you came at this with this idea that you could partner up with schools, but you saw there's just too much competition partnering up with schools. It's too expensive and it's just not the right entry point. Meanwhile, there's a simpler entry point in helping kids do something that's a little bit more basic that people aren't paying attention to. And you said, that's our entry point into this education space. Am I right?
Just about. Yeah. So the entry was basically, can we go straight to parents, right? Can we tell them this story that, like, to be honest, what the research literally says is that if your student enters kindergarten prepared, then they tend to do well. And it makes absolute sense. It's just common sense. If your student understands the teacher, then they do well in class.
I just wouldn't have thought that it would be an insurmountable issue. I would have thought, all right, if they don't know anything, even going into kindergarten, fine, they'll learn it in kindergarten. If they don't know it in kindergarten, they'll learn it by first grade. Why does it even matter that much?
So imagine this, right? You have a student mm-hmm. that doesn't understand the jargon of math. And on average, students in low-income neighborhoods are 3 years behind their funded peers. This all happens along income lines. So it's the bottom 20%. They're the furthest behind. The top 20% are the only students entering prepared for kindergarten. It's typically because the parents can afford to send them to preschool, where the preschool ensures now that they have exactly what's necessary to enter kindergarten. And the next chart that we see is basically the same breakup by income, and the percentile at which they enter and the percentile at which they exit actually tends to be flat lines, with only the top percentile trending up.
Okay.
And so literally what the two graphs together say is that if you enter school behind, then you tend to stay behind, statistically speaking. And so what our system is designed to do is it's designed to fill that gap from a jargon perspective. So the way I like to explain this is, like, again, if you're 3 years behind, it would be like me or you going into a third year biochem course. We'd hear the professor, they wouldn't be speaking English, they'd be speaking English, but we wouldn't understand what they were saying because they'd be using so much jargon, the 3 years worth of jargon that we missed, that we wouldn't get it.
Okay. I think I'm following you. I definitely am following you. I just wouldn't have thought that it would be that dramatic. I could understand how that would be an easier entry point. At that point, did you say, okay, we're starting to close up Elephant Head Software, my software consulting company?
Yeah. So
before you even had a new product, you just said, I'm closing up the consulting company starting from scratch.
We stopped taking on new clients. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And you started to focus on creating your own software. And your first version was what? What did it look like?
It looks probably pretty close to what you're seeing now. I mean, we've had some major version upgrades over time. We switched from technology one to technology two.
Meaning it started out in Flash.
The original thing that they gave me was in Flash, but that was dead on arrival. Basically, it's the University of Denver. So they had a project that they wanted to license. They wanted us to license, but it was developed in Flash. And I said, you know, I really can't do this in Flash because it's Flash, but like it's 2016. I mean, Apple killed Flash in like 2011. Steve Jobs was still alive. Yeah.
2007 when they released the iPhone and then they started to go into battle.
I can't even remember. It was so long ago. Steve Jobs was still alive. That's all I got to say.
Right. It was one of his big fights. They said to you, we have this, you license it. What's the connection to the University of Denver?
So they already had the preschool and kindergarten games, right? So the professor had that and it was owned by the University of Denver. But what we did was we ultimately started over. And the difference between what they had and what we did, is huge. So they were under the, one game per topic type of mindset. And I looked at it and I said, so what's the issue here is that for each of these games, you got to keep going back and forth with the developer. This is all my wheelhouse at this point, right? I've done contract software development for so many different companies over the last, N years. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, what we really got to do is we got to build an engine. It's a gaming engine, right? So like he's building the activities from the research and we're marrying it with graphics in order to provide what we're calling a gamification. It feels like a puzzle game, but really it's the activities that were proven to best teach the concepts. And that's the value.
Okay, got it. So you bring in this new software sophistication and they get rid of their Flash, but he has his understanding of how to teach, right? You just take that, you gamify it. And was the plan to sell it to someone or was it first going to be a free option?
So we started with math games. It was going to be $10 per month. What I realized was there was nothing effective out there because if we saw 75% of high school students not being proficient, then that's a gap in the market. In my opinion, the school would already be using whatever's effective. And so that's what we did is we went straight to parents. I started coding in, say, July of 2016. I actually had a broken hand. I got hit by a tuk-tuk in Thailand. So like I was in a cast and I'm literally two-fingering on one hand when we started this thing. And by 2017, February, we had our first 10 customers. First 50 customers. Of the 50, 10 had used it. Now, we had made it more effective. So like what he came to me with was they would learn on average a year of math. I looked at it. I said, I think I can make this more effective by like taking out some of the animations and some of the like story and like it's just wasting time really. And so we had by April, basically from the customers, the data we collected, on average, they were learning 18 months in about 22 and a half minutes. And I said, okay, so we'll say 30
and a half minutes a week.
22 and a half minutes a week.
Right. And this was a co-owned product? You and he co-owned it?
So he was one of the founders and he decided to exit last year.
Okay. You bought him out?
Yeah.
Were there other founders?
My father was in it while he was still alive.
Okay. I want to ask you about your dad in a little bit. He did something that I'm fascinated by. Let me come back and ask you about how you got your first customers, why you turned some of them away, what you learned from them, and how you evolved it. But one of the things that I noticed is, I'm going to talk about my first sponsor, HostGator. I've been looking for curriculums, for worksheets, for all kinds of stuff. Whenever I get into something, I tend to get a little obsessive about it, And so when I got into teaching my kid, I got a little bit obsessive about it. And what I discovered was these homeschooling websites that are basically WordPress sites that, yes, they have a few worksheets on them. But beyond the fact that it's a new topic for me, it's the same model that I've seen operate all over the internet, except now they've applied it to this to a topic that I now suddenly care about, homeschooling. And where I started to think maybe this whole idea of blogging and lead magnets and that whole thing, maybe it's worn out. I realized, no, it's not. When you're burning with the desire for something like I am for homeschooling, you are excited when somebody says, get this ebook, enter an email address, because I want an ebook. I don't just want to click around and just read your blog post, but your blog posts are the entry point into the ebook. And then the ebook leads me to buy more. Anyway, this whole stuff that we are all paying attention to, that maybe at some point we think this is overwhelming. We've seen it already a million different times. I have to tell you, even if you've seen it a million times, if the topic is right, you're excited about it. And so what I'd say to you is, if you're listening to me and there's a topic you're excited about, bring it over to HostGator. Set up one of these websites that you might have seen a million different times. So WordPress website with a lead magnet, with blog posts and all that. If it's a topic that is exciting to you, that is an urgent need to your audience, it will be something that will grow. It will be something that people want to engage with, and they won't care that the techniques that you're using and the backend software that you're using with WordPress is one that they've seen a million times. They don't care. They just care that you're solving the problem for them. And so if you go to hostgator.com/mixergy, you can get started right now. They'll give you a hosting package. It will let you have unlimited domains hosted. It's not unlimited domain names, but whatever name you come up with, you could host it with them unlimited. They will put it all together for you and make sure that you run it. And the benefit of that is you can try an idea, close it up, try another one, close it up. And then when you hit the big one, just keep going and going and going with it. So hostgator.com/mixergy, bring your idea there, build it up. If you're feeling a little bit burned out, like all this stuff has already happened, WordPress is just old technology, don't. It's still 1/3 of the internet built on WordPress. Don't. It still works when the topic is right. And if you use hostgator.com/mixergy, you'll get their lowest price, you'll get tagged as a Mixergy customer, and you'll get us standing behind you. hostgator.com/mixergy. And I'm really grateful to them for sponsoring. You know, by the way, Aditya, one of my favorite blogs is, I forget the name, but I wrote it down in Notepad just to make sure that I have it. All this woman does is she has these little projects for her kids. She takes a picture of her two kids doing the project, and then she describes how it's done and she puts it up on her website. Super simple. Every day is another blog post. I'm going to copy one of hers tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, I want to have some time with my coffee before the kids like suck me into their world. And so what I'm going to do is have a treasure hunt around the house. For one kid, the youngest one, it's going to be a set of pictures. So he'll get a piece of paper, have a picture of his yellow Lego box, and he'll know he'll have to go into his yellow Lego box because that's what's on the piece of paper. He'll open up the yellow Lego box, and then he'll see a picture of another part of the house, and he'll go and find another scavenger hunt note there, and he'll just keep going until he'll do 6 or 7 of these letters, and then he'll find a piece of chocolate. For the kid who's a little older, it'll be some of the sight words that we've been working on, and that should keep them busy for a good 30 minutes while I have my coffee and read the Wall Street Journal in the morning and see why the world keeps exploding and the stock market keeps going up. What the hell is that? Anyway, but it's all from this one woman's blog. It's nothing but that. All right. You got the first 50 people that you mentioned earlier by going on a podcast. What's the podcast, or what was it about?
It was Ultimate Homeschool Radio, and it's a homeschooling podcast is what it was. So I guess probably the first 50 were homeschoolers.
And you just told them what your product was. You said it was coming, and 50 of them said, we're ready to pay.
Well, she interviewed me for an hour. So they kind of got a good earful of what the value proposition was, all the work that went into this, and what could come out of it. Okay. And to be honest with you, we had a 4-year-old that was doing, multiplication and division at the end of 3 months. So,
Before you were on there? No, you're saying afterwards.
Afterwards, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so they got some good results from it.
And did you give them a commission?
No.
Okay, I see a page on their blog that's called something like Elephant Learning Special Offer, but that's not an affiliate deal with you. They just interviewed you. They did it. Why'd you turn away 50 people who said that they wanted to, out of the 50 people, why did you turn away, what was it, like 30 of them?
So we just let them all in. And what it was that, I mean, so my founder, you know, being a professor, he wanted to be able to maybe do something like what he had done in a classroom where it was like 10 minutes a day, 5 days a week. But, you know, once you give it to the parent, you're kind of at the whim of whatever they're able to do. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, we were there to support, right? Because at that point in time, we didn't have customer success. It was me and him. Mm-hmm. And basically after 3 months, we said, well, we need to figure out what a minimum threshold of usage was. And we said, if they used it on average 10 minutes a week, then they would be included. And that's where we got the 10 from. So it was 10 people used it more than 10 minutes per week on average. And the average was 22 and a half minutes a week.
Oh, and so you let all 50 of them use the product, but it's only 10 who really used it the way that you wanted them to use it. And that's who you were looking at to see how well does this work when people actually use it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I misunderstood that. All right. And that's when you start to see, we have some case studies. We see what's working. What was working? What wasn't working?
Well, gosh, at that time, I think we were only covering through multiplication division. What wasn't working was the marketing. Being called math games was not working very well. People wouldn't give us a lot of attention or time. They'd come to our website. They'd like type something into the chat, and within 2 seconds they were gone. Even though I was telling them that, hey, we're going to guarantee that your child learns a year of math in 3 months. What was working was the product. So like everything that we were doing on that side was going extremely well. We were able to make revisions very quickly because of the way we built the system to both the curriculum and the software. And, I mean, that was my expertise. So that's what I was able to control. And when we switched the marketing to be more of, hey, this is serious. This is like a math academy for your children. And we're giving you a very, very powerful tool for mathematics. That's when people started to pay attention and buy.
And this was in the ads or on the website itself?
Both. Yeah.
Okay. How did you get on Channel 9 News? I heard that sent you some customers.
Yeah. So, that was through, the initial partnership with DU, because Alvaro was DU. I'm a DU alumni. This was a great DU story.
And so a friend of yours, I guess, introduced you to somebody there, or he knew someone there, and you...
The marketing department just got wind of the story and put us out.
The school's marketing department said, hey, let's make sure that that this is covered. How many customers did you get from that? Do you remember?
From that initial one, maybe another 200. And from the 200, we had a whole bunch of success stories. We were able to go back to the same reporter and say, hey, look, these guys came in from your news report. It'd just be a good follow-up story to let people know the kind of success they had. We found someone in town that was the mother of a two-year-old. The two-year-old had just turned three when we scheduled the interview. And that student was doing kindergarten math, almost first grade. And so we thought, this is perfect. Why don't we talk about that? Because that really, that fixes literally the beginning of the problem that I was telling you about.
Yeah. At the time, I think you were charging, what, $10 a month, you said?
Yeah, we had switched to 35 by the time they interviewed her.
The $10 to 35 happened because of a ride you had in an Uber car. You're smiling.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So I was in an Uber. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, this was the thing, was like, I'm telling the Uber drivers about like what we do.
Because?
I don't know, something to talk about.
Okay.
I mean, start talking with an Uber driver. Sooner or later, they ask you what you do.
Okay. I thought maybe you were trying to do some research and understand what was exciting people and what wasn't. No, it was just you telling them what you do because they ask. Okay.
And I was refining the pitch. I mean, every time you give the pitch, right? So on average, children in our system, right? I got the whole thing down. I was in the Uber. I was telling them about it. And I got to the end of what I was typically saying at the time. And the guy was like, sold. I'm in. I'm going to go home. I'm going to sign up my children. What's the name of the website? I'm going to pop it into my phone right now. And I was looking at the guy, and I was just getting this vibe. Like I was in the Istanbul Bazaar, and I was like, this guy is one of those guys, right? Like he's totally savvy. And I bet you I could, like, I'm going to ask him a question. So I said to him, I was like, hey, listen, You just give him, and I literally told him, you're giving me this vibe. And I got to ask you, do you feel like people are coming to our website and they don't believe that we can deliver on our proposition because it's only $10 per month? And at first he didn't understand me. And he was like, no, I love the price. And I said, no, but do you think people believe that we can do what we do? And he, you know, like how they, you, like you adjust the mirror and they, you look at someone back through the rearview mirror. That's what he did. He's looking me straight in the eyes through the rearview mirror. And he's like, you need to be charging at minimum $35 a month. If I were you, I'd be charging $55 a month.
Because charging too little makes the product feel less effective, a little more, I don't know. It takes away credibility somehow.
It takes away the credibility of the learn 1 year of math in 3 months. And I mean, we're guaranteeing the result because we know the average is 18 months.
Yeah. You know what? Another part, I don't know like whether it's my place to say it or not, but I feel like the logo also, there's something about the logo that as I zoom in on it, maybe it's just that it's looking jagged. And so it doesn't look as crisp as everything else. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I'm going to take a look now.
You gotta, I was looking at this too. I'm telling you, I'm in the market. I want to know, what can I sign my kid up to? I'm cutting everything back that makes no sense for us as a family. We're not buying food. We're not getting we're not going to restaurants, obviously, but we're also not having any takeout, any food deliveries from restaurants. We're cutting stuff back because who knows what kind of depression, recession we're going to end up in. I have no idea. But when it comes to education, I'm willing to spend. It's worth it. It pays back and it's nothing compared to other expenses. So I'm in the market and I'm looking. And one thing that made me question it is that, you know, the other thing that made me question it is the reviews in the App Store. Now, some of them I just dismiss completely. Anyone who says this is too expensive, I feel like that's not a reason. If it works, then pay $100 a month. It doesn't matter. If it doesn't work, then let's talk about it. Some of them are legitimate where I'm looking at the App Store reviews and people are saying it's too much noise, just all this bells and whistles going off all day. You see that? And you guys have like a 3 out of 5 rating in the App Store.
We do have a low rating in the App Stores. So first, the thing is that we built this all using web technology instead of trying to build native iOS and Android apps.
Intentionally.
And because of that, early on, there were some rough edges within the apps that we had to smooth out, and we got some low reviews because some people ran into some bugs. We're seeing less of that now than we were seeing in the beginning. Now, there are a lot of people that experience success, and we ask them to review us on Facebook. So if you look in our Facebook reviews, that's where you're going to see the people who are coming in saying, this is the success we saw.
I saw that, yeah.
On the App Store, I think more of what it is people kind of have these expectations, and if they're not met, they feel like they can go to the App Store and just rip it apart. For the bells and whistles, I mean, basically we play a sound when the student is dragging something across the screen. And so if their student is just pushing that over and over and over again, at least they know it happens, right? So when I built this tool, my child was not born yet. He was on his way. And I am literally imagined like, okay, 3 years down the road, I have to do this. I got to teach this child how to count. How am I going to do it? And so like, I thought, well, I want to be able to know he's playing. So if he's doing it, I want to hear something in the background, number one. Number two, I want to hear when he gets something right, because then I can try to give some positive reinforcement. It helps him like the app. It also helps him understand that he did something successfully.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we got that loop working. And so
sitting in the room, you want to know that that's happening.
Absolutely.
Got it. And so like, you were saying the funny part is?
Yeah. The funny part is that like, my child now is 3.5 years old. So I literally just got there 2 weeks ago. This is not in any of our marketing, but this is the level of detail of thought that we put into every single feature, including the noises that the app makes, right?
I'll tell you another part here's a part that I think you guys do well that I haven't seen other apps do. Let's take Khan Academy, for example. Everyone talks about Khan Academy. I'm not watching my kid as they're using Khan Academy for more than, I'll do it for 5-10 minutes tops. And then it becomes a little bit annoying for me to just watch them count over and over again. The problem is I don't see what they do on that thing. If I give them 30 minutes of Khan Academy kids, that's supposed to be a really useful experience for them. I don't know if it was or it wasn't. were they just staring at the same thing over and over again? I know when I go back in the room, they're playing the Muffin Man over and over again. There's no parent dashboard. And you guys have a parent dashboard, right? Here's what your kid did. Here's what your kid answered. I find that that's incredibly thoughtful. And for some reason, I don't know of a single other app that does that. I'm sure they exist. I just don't see any of the popular ones do it, and none that I've used does it.
It's the other half of the equation. So if the student is playing, right, the other half of the equation was, okay, if I have my child in here, what would be the other half of it? I'd still want to work with him. I'd still want to make sure everything's clicking, everything's working. So we tell you exactly what the student's working on, exactly how we would teach it if it was us in the room doing it, and exactly what our activities are trying to do. And then on top of that, we even give activities that you should do outside of the system in order to further the learning right now. So for example, if your student's learning to count, we recommend playing board games. So we went and bought Chutes and Ladders, the actual board game, because when you roll the die, they have to identify the number. They then have to produce that number of spaces. And I mean, they're doing it in game, in fun with you. So like it becomes cemented how important this is to life.
Let's talk about the marketing that you mentioned earlier. You had a friend who came to you and said, "Whoa, you guys must be blowing up. I see your stuff everywhere." And you weren't happy about that. Do you know the friend I'm talking about? Why were you not happy about that?
So we had just created a 1% Facebook audience, and it was 2 million people. And he came up to me at a networking luction, and he's like, "Oh yeah, you must be blowing up, man. I see your stuff everywhere." And I'm like, "Well, you know, you don't have children that would be the right age, right?" He's like, "No, my children are in college." And I'm like, "Yeah, you really shouldn't be seeing my ads. I'm going to go fix that."
And when you did, what happened?
So when I came back and I overlaid our target audience on the 1% audience that Facebook gave us, first we dropped the reach from 2 million people to 600,000. But the conversion rate went up by quite a bit, enough for us to make it cost effective for us to just buy out the 50 per week that Facebook needs for its algorithms to tune. So we got to 50 per week.
50 what per week?
In this case, it was 50 actual conversions.
Okay, for them to be able to do it. Got it. Just by making that one change, getting rid of parents of older kids or people who aren't parents. Which one was it?
It was basically going into Facebook and saying, "Only give me parents from ages 0 to 12, I think at the time.
Got it. Have you noticed that advertising rates on Facebook are going down? And are they also more effective for you?
I don't know if I've noticed them going down. I could go back and look and see if that's true. What I feel like is that there's more eyeballs now on Facebook. Our ads are starting to work as though they were last year when we were hitting the audience for the first time. Mm.
All right. I'm going to come back and ask you about some of the changes that you've made, about the agency that you discovered, and then other things that are helping you grow. Actually, no. Is there an agency that you work? Yeah, there is. There is. Tapcast. Am I right?
We're no longer working with Tapcast.
Okay. Are you doing it yourself now?
We're working with Kurt Malley and the Belt Method.
Really?
That's right.
Wait, does Kurt Malley do it for you, or he teaches you how to do it?
Well, we're working with his agency, so both.
Got it. Okay. I like that guy. I saw him at a conference and he had somebody following him with the camera. He goes, "Andrew, there's so many people at this conference. What I'm doing is I'm taking photos of myself at this conference, targeting the people at this conference. And now it feels like everybody knows who I am and I have more credibility selling to people who can see me here at the conference with them." It's like stuff like that that I thought was just so good. All right. Let me talk about my second sponsor. Do you know Russell Brunson?
I've heard of him. Yeah.
He's a guy who runs ClickFunnels. So he's got a book about how to get traffic for your site. I think you're going to like it. The book is called Traffic Secrets. But he also has a podcast. And let me give you a couple of the techniques that he's got in his podcast. What he does is he took the idea from Traffic Secrets, the concepts and the stories from Traffic Secrets, the book, and turned it into a podcast where he's sharing some of them. There's one where, let's see, episode number 5, he talks about the Dream 100 list, where he explains it. This is what he did. He goes, look, I can't write the software. Somebody else is writing it. While they're doing it, what I'm going to do is, we don't have money for a bunch of ads. We don't know anybody because we're a bunch of people who are outsiders. I'm going to get a list of the people who have my audience. I'm going to target them and watch what they're doing as much as possible. And so we created these lists on Facebook, on Instagram, where we started following them and just obsessed on the 100 people. Wonder if I was in that 100 list. And he'd send them messages from time to time when he saw their stuff. He'd follow up with what they're doing and understand it and comment and just get into their world. And then when his software came out and it was time for him to promote it, he went back to some of the people on the list, the ones who he'd established some rapport with, and they started promoting him to their Facebook groups or to their podcast or whatever they had. I think Tony Robbins was on his Dream 100 list. And he got to do a few different events with Tony Robbins. And the beauty of this is it doesn't cost much money. It allows him to pay attention to the people he really cares about and wants to work with. And it allowed him then to grow his business. He's got a bunch of ideas like that. They're in his book. I read his book. I loved his book. It's just one of these quick reads with full of good stories that are backed by real people who he has worked with or are in his world somehow and his own experiences. Anyway, I recommend the podcast. If you're out there listening to me and you're looking for another podcast, go listen to this podcast. It's Traffic Secrets. They sponsored, and as a follow-up to this interview, I think they're going to be a great podcast for you to listen to. It's Traffic Secrets with Russell Brunson. Each one of these episodes is full of another technique like that Dream 100 list, and it's all in there for you. Traffic Secrets. You know what? Before we even get into Tapcast, let's talk about your dad. How'd your dad end up being a part of this business?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that either. So it's a new story. So actually we were working on an IoT product and we weren't getting a lot of traction with it, but basically when at the same time as we were looking at, doing elephant learning, we were considering, should we try to maybe get this IoT product to market? So I went to my dad, and we had lost a couple of clients at that point. Like some people just kind of roll off naturally. They bring things in house, et cetera. So we had lost a couple of clients, and I'm trying to figure out which direction do I head. The person I was working with said, you know what? Try to raise $50,000 from friends and family. Right. So I went to my dad with the IoT thing. And the math thing. And I said, which of these two would you invest $50,000 in? And he said, I want to do the math thing. I'd rather teach children math with my $50,000 than try to, you know, put some stuff on trucks. And I was like, oh, okay. And I went back to, the teammate and I said, that's what he said. And he was like, well, gosh, that's telling. So that got him looking into maybe some of the research that Alvaro had presented me. He went and verified it all. Unfortunately he wasn't a marketer. He was more of a sales guy. So he was the IoT sales guy and worked himself out of a job at the same time.
And so your dad, one of the things that was fascinating to me was, what was his involvement with motels? Did he own these motels? He built them up back in the '80s.
Yeah.
For his own motels? Like, tell me about it.
Yeah, so he was with like maybe 8 or 9 other families that were all from Indian descent that they kind of pooled together, got an SBA loan, built the first one out in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It was called Luxury 8 Inn. And okay. I think by like 1990-something, they had maybe 50 or 60 of these things.
Wow. And it was called Luxury 8?
Yeah.
What's the 8 about?
Well, that was the problem because Super 8 got pissed about the 8. They sued them. And then the next thing you know, all of these were Days Inns or Ramada Inns or whatever Send In owned at the time.
Oh, they started then going and franchising those. Is it called a franchise where you get to put those names on? It is.
Okay. That's right. Yeah. I mean, that was how they settled the case, I guess.
I know that wasn't Super 8 charging $8 a night. That's why they called it Super 8, right?
I think that's the case.
Where it comes back. So you don't even know. They just came up with like Luxury 8 was 8 a lucky number.
I'm pretty sure there was something like $29. No, I think I think honestly, one of them was trying to like game the eight. So like it was a legit
got
suit.
It. No. Look at this. No, Super 8's name is derived from its original room rate, which is $8.88 a night when the first location opened in 1974 in South Dakota.
I'll buy that.
No, I remember.
By the '90s, it was quite a bit more. That's what.
Yeah.
I wasn't alive in '74.
There's not a lot of foresight into that name, but I guess at first it helped them pop. Wow. Do you remember anything about that? That sounds like a pretty impressive business, huh?
I mean, part of my skill set came from that, to be honest with you. I learned to code in 1994 when I was 14 years old. And I remember walking around the motel saying, I could automate that. I could automate that. Just pointing at things and like putting processes around the housekeepers, like give them a checklist for God's sake, right?
Did you actually check it off? You helped them implement the checklist, or you just bothered you enough that you said, I think I've got to do better when I run my own life?
I mean, I recommended that. They didn't take that on. What I did that they actually accepted at one point was I wrote down a process for the front desk, because the biggest problem was that in December, when the rate was like $25 a month or a night, someone would call and say, hey, I want to book something on June 18th, which was like the Hot Rod Festival or something. And it was like $90 a night or something. So it's like they're booking $25 a night at like June 18th because they don't understand that the room rate changes from December to June.
Yeah.
So that's that, like, and then I did that. And he was like, this is amazing. I'm like, now try a checklist for the housekeeper. No, that's too much.
Was it all families that you knew or were connected to you, or it was just a business thing your dad did? Like, how involved were you? You were.
I worked in one as a manager for a while. Mm. I was 17 years old.
I remember watching my dad in that hustle phase for him. That was exciting. And then I also remember when it was no longer exciting and like got to do it another year. And I miss those exciting days, seeing my dad and his friends build things up, getting to go and work at his office and watching things just build and build and get bigger. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
You were, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about Tapcast then, coming back now to Elephant Learning. How did you find them and what was it about them that attracted you?
Well, they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. I got on the phone, I guess, with the CEO, though it was a little confusing at the time if that's who I was speaking to. And he basically said, you know what? We're going to carry you for 2 months for free just to show you what we can do. And if you like it, you could pay us.
Because by then you were buying ads yourself on Facebook?
Yeah.
Were. Okay. And he said, look, we will take on your ads. Don't pay us any of our agency fees. We'll just pay the ad feeds. Got it. Okay.
And I mean, at that time, so like we had started around a $30 CAC. Then we, I guess, blew out the 1% audience after 3 or 4 months. So I said, oh, let's take it up. Let's take it to a 4% audience so that I don't have to do this every 2 or 3 months. That was a bad idea. And now I'm at a $54 CAC. And Tapcast steps in, and the next day they had it at $22. And I was like, right. this is wonderful, right? So like 2 months later, he's like, so now you got to pay us. I'm like, whatever.
Like, why was that such a high CAC? Consider cost of acquisition was what? What did you say when you were doing it? 40?
It was like 30. And then it went up to 54 when we went from a 1% audience to a 4% audience.
But that's 2 months of subscription, right? What's the lifetime value of a customer for you?
We keep people 3 to 6 months. I think they get the value at 3 months. They get the 1 year and they say, maybe I keep going. Many of those children learn quite a bit more. 2 or 3 years, they say, let's keep going.
Okay. So then it seems like 50, 60 is not a problem then. It feels like, from what you're telling me, that cost of acquisition going even to $100 is not that big of a deal. It's a big deal, but it's manageable, no?
I think the issue was cash flow, because at that point we still weren't profitable. So we were out of pocket to do the ads.
So you give the money to Facebook, you have to wait a few months for it to pay off. And if it doesn't pay off the way you expected, then you're really in trouble.
I think what you're saying is true, though on the ground it exhibited in a different way. And to us, on the ground, it exhibited as the growth wasn't coming on as fast as we needed it to.
Okay.
And you know, obviously taking it from 54 to 22 very, very quickly, it was coming on as fast as we needed it to.
Okay. Okay. But it was just not something that you could afford to do at the time. They come on board, they reduce the cost of acquisition, the CAC, cost of customer acquisition, and you're golden with them. And why did you leave them then?
They went into a different business. So now they're in the credit markets. And I think if you go to their website, that's what they're advertising. Something like they'll help fund your Facebook ads. They use their algorithms that they used for us to make us all that money to now be able to predict whether someone will be successful or not.
Non-dilutive financing to scale Facebook ad spend. So does that mean that they're get up to $1 million monthly, receive funds within days, no collateral or guarantee? So they're lending money?
Yeah.
Got it. And that's not where you want to be. You don't want to be in the space of taking on debt to do this.
Well, I mean, ultimately, the conversation for them is they don't want to do anything extra. So very quickly, we hit ad fatigue. So what they did worked quite well, like very, very, very well. I want to say that.
Yeah.
Then at some point, they said, well, learn 1 year of math in 3 months is exhausted and you can't do that anymore. And I'm like, what else? Like, what else am I supposed to do? That's the value proposition, right?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't help create new content. And we were just kind of stuck going back and forth. And how do we get new content in here? And so ultimately, I had to go to something more advanced. And of course, what Kurt offers it is the complete package. So that makes a lot more sense from a marketing standpoint, even to me, who's novice.
That's something that you've said to us, to me in the interview, to our producer, that you're not a marketer, that's not where you feel strongest. Influencer ads, you did that too. How did that work out?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, let's just say I was getting better results out of promo.com, but I mean, it added people, and it was a system that we had working, and it required very little effort from my side. We were using social native. So like, if you want to try to do that, I'd say go talk to social native.
Wait, what's and, promo.com? What's social native? I don't know any of these.
So social native, Tapcast connected us with them. And what they do is, they will run campaigns with influencers, and you can then use the videos to go remarket if you want, not remarket, but like literally put them into your Facebook ads or your Pinterest ads or wherever. So you could take that same ad and push it out your channel. And they kind of work with smaller influencers. So it works well for the influencer and it works well for me.
So but the at the same time, will create a video, run it to their audience, and then you get to use it to promote to your audience too.
That's right.
Okay. All right. And then what's promo.com? You said you got good results with that.
So promo.com is wonderful. It's stock video, stock audio, and you can put basically 3 slides worth of text on. So it works very nicely for Facebook. You just put that ad in there, 3 slides of text. The last slide's typically your logo and stuff.
And then do you do that? It's a tool for creating that.
Yeah.
Got it. And so you're just saying you using those tools helped, you using promo.com to create videos helped you. How are you doing on That's time? Right. I see you looking up like there's something coming up because we're running.
Oh, no, late. No. For some reason, Slack pinged me and I'm trying to D&D it.
Okay. I didn't realize. So promo.com, just software that you're using, creating videos using stock photos. The stock photos here do look good. And then you're running it on social media and that's helping you.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of those.
Well, let me see what else is going on for you guys. Oh, you mentioned earlier, you couldn't do everything right from the start. Android, iOS, Facebook, it was just killing you, you told our producer, and you had to cut back. And that's why you went all web in the beginning, right?
That's right.
Why back away from it? If all web was working, why do you need an iPhone app?
So the iPhone app now literally pops open the web browser and points it at our website.
Okay.
But because of the JavaScript web bridge, getting very technical, okay. Because of that bridge, we're actually able to control some native stuff. So we get a better feel for iOS on our web app than if you just went to our website, in that, like, you know, the games are landscape, so we can turn everything landscape and force it to be landscape. Whereas in web, we have to say, can you please turn your phone sideways? But yeah, so like, we didn't actually back away from it. We're kind of, we're sticking that route until we get to a place where maybe it doesn't make sense anymore. But honestly, it's so much easier to have one code base than three.
What I told you before we got started that I'm fascinated by homeschooling. You said, we can talk about that, but what I'm more passionate about is the way that we teach math. What is so special about the way that you teach math?
So what we do is we address the language, and we're able to help then the student connect what's happening in the classroom to the language. And that's the gap. That's the struggle for the homeschooled or for the teacher in the classroom, right? So the issue is, again, the jargon behind it, right? And you got to imagine what it's like for one of these, for one of these students. I'll bring up that biochem thing that I said earlier, right? If you're a third grader and you're 3 years behind conceptually, it's the same as me or you walking into that biochem course and not understanding the professor, except that the third grader can't walk out of class and me and you could get up and walk out because we're not getting value from it. Now, it's worse than that, because not only are they forced to be there, but at the same time, they're telling themselves that maybe they're not good at math, or that they're stupid, or that, right? I mean, the stories of defeat are being seeded right there, because they can't understand the teacher, right? And it's very, very challenging for us to teach those concepts through instruction. It has to be done through an experience. So, like, you can't instruct a student what is 5 plus 4. You can tell them the answer is 9. They don't understand why the answer is 9. But if you tell them, give me 5 things, give me 4 more things, how many do I have now? And they count up to see 9, right? And you say, well, that's what 5 plus 4 means. Now they have the capability to connect it. And that's what's missing. And that's what's hard to do in a classroom environment when it's 30 students to one teacher. It's very, very challenging for the teacher to know who is at what level of understanding, and then how do I build them to where we are now, right? You can't understand multiplication unless you understand addition. It's clear.
Right, yeah.
But in many schools, and we talked to one superintendent, I think, out in Illinois, we told him what we do. And he says, you know, it's really, really sad, because if we have a fifth grader that's behind, we put them in the fifth grade materials and we just take them slower. So instead of torturing them fast, we're going to torture them slow. And it's just common sense that if they didn't understand something beforehand, we should go back and build them from.
Oh no, we just lost him. I wonder what's going on in his house. I wonder if it's all of
said,
us.
I don't.
That I just lost you for a minute. You're saying if instead of torturing them fast, we're torturing them slow, and we lost you for a moment.
Oh, I apologize. Yeah, so let me try again. So basically he said it's common sense what you're saying, right? If we don't go back and address where they didn't understand something and then build them up from there, there's no way to recover them. All we're doing is teaching the materials that they're not going to understand slower. How are they going to catch up? I don't even know why we're doing it this way. So hopefully they change their system based on the conversation we had. But that's what our system does, is our system finds that level of understanding and starts giving them activities, like actual experiences that the student can do, to then connect the ideas to what's happening in the classroom, or what the parent is saying, or what the teacher is saying. And by reading the reports and maybe trying the activities in parent modes, we're giving the teacher and the parent ability to connect those two ideas.
Okay. And the way that you do this, here's what I've noticed about your app. And again, this is just me researching it. I still haven't gotten my kids into it, because I'll explain why in a moment. What I like is that you're assessing the skills of each person, of each kid, instead of saying, well, you're 5 years old, so you must be in this class. and you must know this stuff, right? I've noticed that even with my son. I say he's 5 years old, but most of the kids in his class at this point are 6 years old. So I made a mistake by saying to Khan Academy's app that he's five, which means the stuff that he's being asked is so insanely simple that he's dropped out of it and he's moved on to just, I don't know, doing other stuff. So you test them first. Here's the thing that held me back. I want to see what it looks like. I want to try it. I want to see, am I about to put my kid into a dopey game? Can I play the game? Can I watch it over someone's shoulder? Like, the more I could see it before I put them in, the better, because I feel like I only have one shot with them. If I get them playing a game that's not great, then it's done. I've lost them on that. And if I do four or five different apps that suck, I lost my credibility for the next one. They're not as enthused. They're not as willing to try. If I get them sucked into a game that stinks, I can't break them of that. And it's like breaking them of Netflix. And I'd rather not have something like that in my life.
I'm so glad you're asking this question, by the way.
What do you think of that?
Well, so this is actually our challenge right now, is being able to explain to the parent what it is and being able to set the expectations properly with the student. Many of the students that make it through our system, they're extremely grateful that they had it. And you can imagine why, right? At the same time, right, our goal was never to be the coolest game out there, right? Our goal was to be the most effective thing out there. And, you know, I remember
I want to see it. I want to see it before implementing it. I want to just try it, take it for a test drive first. And I don't even know like how to explain it, but I wouldn't introduce my team to Pipe Drive to organize the way that we book guests until I just went in and messed around with it, even if it's with an account I was going to toss away. And in some cases, what I do is I go into YouTube and I watch, like, here's the first step and the second step and see what happens to understand it. I think we want to know what it is before we bring it into our lives. And it's really hard. So I did that with Khan Academy a little bit, but they have enough of a reputation. So I didn't do too much of that. But it's really hard without that, I feel. I'm not ready to throw them in there.
But yeah, no, this is what I keep trying to tell my marketing people. Help me make a video or something that will give the parent more information about what they're getting. Because I look at my homepage and I do see some people come back and complain and say, I'd like to buy this, but this is the complaint that I have. And what I tell them is that...
I wouldn't even send that over to you. It's too late by that time. Sorry, but what do you tell them?
No, I hear you. What I tell them when they come to me is that we do allow you to try it for 3 days. If you cancel before 3 days, we don't charge you. So like, if your kids aren't going to like it, then you don't have to do it. At the same time, I mean, again, we're not trying to build the coolest game out there. And when I was a kid, I remember playing games kind of like what we built here. And I remember playing games that tried to hide the math. And what I remember was that, you know what, you're not passing anything off on me, right? Like, this is a math game. So if you've got a student that doesn't like math or is going to be affected by the fact that it's math, then we're not going to be passing anything by them. That's for sure. And we don't even recommend that you try. However, what we are doing that is different is that you only have to use this 10 minutes a day, and then you don't have to do, like, you can go play any other video game that you'd want to, like a video game that you actually want to play, right? And so by doing that, we allow the child to do what they want to do without having to be forced to play some video game that may or may not be something they like. The graphics are completely modular. That tends to be the next complaint. But the fact is
that it's boring or repetitive. And so you're thinking it's modular and you can change it?
Well, the next complaint that we see that's kind of like a throwaway complaint is the graphics suck. Well, every game that I've ever had in my entire life, I've shown to a friend, the graphics suck. We had a game that, like, I had a game once. It was live action video. Like, it was like seven CD-ROM. It was a gimmick. It was like seven CD-ROMs and like, it was all live action video. And I showed her something. The graphics suck. I'm like, dude, that's live video. like, at what point are the graphics good? So I didn't want to be in that game. Like, I'm not trying to make, right? But at the same time, I gave enough power to the designers that they can make it look however they want. And you're right. Another complaint that we have is that it's repetitive or boring. I believe that's a lot of the parents looking at it.
Yeah.
Because give me five things, give me one more thing. give me six things. Give me one more thing. That's the same question to the parent. That's a completely different question to a five-year-old. Now, if you got a 10-year-old working on that material, we do have a method to put it into test out, because I think as soon as they pick up the language, they've already had years of experience that help them. And now it might look repetitive, but what we're doing is we're selling you a tool. And so, like, you know your child best. If it's too easy, put them into test out mode. It will quickly accelerate them and put them back to where they need to
be. Let them test out at this stage so that they don't keep learning it and then move on to the next.
That's all right.
I feel like you've hit on something that is going to be more and more appreciated. I don't yet know how, but this was not at all obvious to me. And I don't think other people are paying attention to it. And I think that this is going to become increasingly more important in the world. And so if I were to sum up some of what I've learned doing interviews with entrepreneurs who are doing well during COVID, here's some of the things that I've noticed. Number one, creator economy growing strong. You see people like Gumroad, ClickFunnels, they're catering to creators, Teachable, and they're growing their businesses because more creators are creating right now, especially in like the independent side hustle, which now becomes a main hustle. Food businesses like Mercado, and I see a few smaller ones that haven't yet agreed to do an interview with me, but they've been sending me private messages. Obviously, they're doing well. That people are buying things remotely, food remotely, much more. E-commerce in general is growing, and you see this obviously in Shopify's numbers overall, but even smaller stores that, well, Brewmate. I've got their cup at home. They are doing better, just selling cups and selling things to people who are drinking alcohol. And now what you're helping me realize is anyone who's helping parents teach their kids is a good contender for an interview for me, because their business is probably growing as parents are becoming more sensitized to their part in teaching their kids. And you didn't pick this because of COVID, but it's, you're doing it well, and COVID is helping you do it with more customers.
That's right.
All right. So basically, I started this interview yapping in a long-winded way. I closed it in a long-winded way, and it's coming from a position of passion. So I should stop doing interviews that I'm passionate about and focus more on interviews that are more rote. All right.
I think it was great. I don't know.
I think it was
thank
great.
Thank you for having me here.
I think it was great. I'm excited about your business. I'm excited to have you here. Thank you so much for doing it. For anyone who wants to go check out the site, it is elephantlearning.com. Start there probably. I like the video that you have with the woman who explains it and shows some of the screens. And that's available at elephantlearning.com. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first is going to help you host your website right. If you haven't started a business, if you haven't created yet, this is the time to do it. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. They'll make it super simple for you and you'll get started and grow. And if you hate your hosting company or they charge you too much, now's a great time to switch. hostgator.com/mixergy. And finally, now that this podcast is over, go check out Traffic Secrets with Russell Brunson. Each episode will give you a few techniques that you will be able to use to get results. And frankly, Russell's just a good storyteller and an interesting guy to listen to. And so I think you'll get motivated and be entranced by him. I know I am. So go close this out by listening to Traffic Secrets podcast on whatever app you're listening to me on. Bye, everyone.